Court here. Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the AirDrop Podcast. As we continue our spin through the world of college athletics, I am pleased to be joined by the Commissioner of the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, Danielle Harris. Commissioner Harris, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. When did you know that athletics would be your path?
Oh, good question. I would say very early on, I was always involved in athletics one way or another. Whether it was playing basketball at recess or being always one of the first girls that the boys would pick to be on their team at recess. So I knew very early on, my pops loved sports, my grandfather loved sports. So I've always been around it and involved in it. So it's always been a part of my life. I can't really think of a time where it hasn't been a part of it. So
When did you choose Bowling Green, and what was it about not just Bowling Green, but going into journalism that kind of piqued your interest?
absolutely. Well, in high school, we had a newspaper class, and it was something I was very interested in. I was good at it. And I wanted to be the next Robin Roberts. At the time, she was on the on ESPN. She was one of the main anchors, and so very well respected. And so I said, you know what? I want to be like her. I want to be able to interview the athletes. I want to be able to get the scoop, get the story, get the exclusive. And so I kind of headed down that path. And so, again, had a phenomenal journalism teacher, Miss Natter. Still in communication with her to this day, 20 some odd years later. And she encouraged me to apply for a scholarship in high school, and I got a journalism scholarship from the Detroit Free Press and Ford Motor Company. And so it was a nice piece of money. It was $24,000, which was a lot of money at the time. And so I had to use that scholarship at an accredited program. So at the time, U of M had just gotten rid of their communications program. A ton of my friends were going to Michigan State, and I've always wanted to be different. I don't know what it was that I said, oh, I'm not going to Michigan State. I really wanted to go to an HBCU. But my mom said that was too far. And I had a partial scholarship to play volleyball at an HBCU in Tennessee, and my mom said, that's too far, and this journalism scholarship is a little bit more money, so guess which one you're taking? You're taking this one. But at the time, Bowling Green had a recruiter. His name was Clarence Terry, and he was a black guy, and I had made contact with him at a college fair at our school back when I was in 10th grade. And so he would come back every year. He remembered who I was. And I made a connection with him. And I said, you know what? Let's give Bowling Green a try, And so he came back my 11th grade year and did on-site admissions. And I was admitted to Bowling Green. And it was a plus-plus because they had a great journalism program. And I was able to use my journalism scholarship there as well. So it all worked out.
When did you know you want to make the journalism and to getting involved in the administration side of athletics?
So, when I volunteered, I worked for the TV station in undergrad. I worked at the newspaper. And so, great experiences. Do not get me wrong, great experiences. But being a black girl from the city of Detroit, going to a PWI, and it's over 18,000 students, and there was less than 600 African American students on campus, and sometimes that can be a little intimidating, right? And so it was very hard to kind of get in that anchor chair at that time. And so, you know, I knew I loved working behind the scenes as well too, and putting all the pieces together. And so my first internship with the Washington Mystics, I got to see a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that happened. And I said, you know what? I kind of like this better, you know? And so that brought me from wanting to go, you know, in front of the camera to kind of working on the stuff behind the scenes and working with the teams and the players and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I made the transition.
When you took the job with the Agliac, what was that first day like? And did you think that years later you'd be running your own conference?
Ooh, you know, the first day at the GLIAC, well, my boss who hired me at the time, Dale Robertson, was my previous boss when I was an intern at the Mid-American Conference. So was very familiar with him. He was familiar with me and my work ethic. And, you know, he gave me my first shot, or I won't say my first shot, but he positioned me. Put me in position to be a commissioner. And he really had to convince me because I was not convinced on taking the job at the GLIAC because I had to do compliance. And I said, who wants to do compliance? Who wants to be the person that tells coaches and administrators no, right? Who wants to do that? But working there and being there for 7.5 years in a very, very, very competitive league at the Division II level prepared me for where I am today. And Dale put me in the position in order to learn everything I needed to learn to be able to take the next step and lead my own conference.
Sorry, no, you have a bachelor's from Bowling Green. You have a master's from Kent State, both in the MAC conference. When they play, who do you root for?
Oh, it's hard. I'm gonna be honest with you. It's very hard because, you know, I worked in the athletic department at Kent State. I kind of root for both. If it's football, I root for Bowling Green. If it's basketball, I root for Kent. So, and that's only because, you know, they were really good in football when I was there in undergrad, Bowling Green was, and they were very good at basketball when I was in grad school at Kent State. So that's kind of how I try to justify it.
When we come back from break, I want to discuss your journey to Wisconsin and kind of where you see the conference now and where you see the conference down the road. That's after a quick timeout. You are listening to the AdDrop podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with AdDrop podcast. Terrence Biggs, Danielle Harris, the commissioner of the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. Commissioner, two-part question. When you accepted the job at the IWIAC, what was the first thing you wanted to accomplish while during the first few weeks of your tenure, and how'd you celebrate?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I will say we were in the middle of a pandemic. And so you worked so hard to get to this spot. You know, I remember the day that I interviewed. It was March 5th, when I interviewed, and I want to say it might have been the 3rd or 4th week of March when I got the call, when they made the offer. And you know, I didn't get a chance to celebrate. You know, I celebrated with my family because we were pretty much on lockdown for the most part. But one thing that I did do when I got that phone call from Chancellor Shields and, you know, said that they wanted to offer me the job, of course I said, you know, well, I need 24 hours to think about it, right? Because that's what you gotta say. You know, I needed to think about, especially, you know, stepping into this position and how amazing this conference is and taking it on during a global pandemic, right? So, first thing I did after I hung up that phone is I dropped to my knees and I thank God because that was something that I dreamed about doing was being a commissioner, and I realized that goal was within reach. So, you know, celebrated with my family, of course. And I think when I finally took the job here was just understanding that I was going to have to lead a conference through the unknown. This world had not experienced a global pandemic in 102 years at that point, right? There was no playbook for what we were dealing with. And so I think the thing that I did the best was to try to reassure everybody that I would do and put my best foot forward to get us back to competition and to do it safely, and responsibly. And I think that we did that. So it wasn't necessarily what I wanted to accomplish coming in, given the circumstances of being in a global pandemic, but I believe that, the first thing was just to introduce myself to everybody, right? And that's pretty much what a commissioner and what an AD does. You listen to your constituents, to your membership for the first 90 to 100 days to figure out where the needs are. Mine, however, lasted a little bit longer, because, I had to figure out how to get us back to return to play. But also, when we got to return to play and I got on our campuses and I was able to interface with our student athletes, our coaches, and our administrators, I got to listen to them tell their story about what makes their campus unique. So again, there were some things that I wanted to accomplish. Obviously, I knew we needed some work on just branding ourselves, rebranding ourselves, with a brand refresh, and then creating our digital network. So those are two of the things that I knew I wanted to accomplish, but I couldn't do that in year one. It had to wait. Those things had to wait because I had to get us back to playing, So that was the most important thing coming in.
Do you see yourself as a trailblazer because outside of HBCU conferences, you're one of the few black female commissioners at any level of college athletics?
Yeah, there's actually five of us. So, you got the MEAC, you got the Big South, you got the CIAA, you have myself, you have the Centennial Conference, and then you have the Gulf South Conference, which is the NAIA conference office. And all of those women are phenomenal. We all have our own group chat where, we support each other. We share best practices. I love those women. I've been knowing those women for a very long time. Because we came up in some of the same circles, right? But do I consider myself to be a trailblazer? Yes, I do. I do. And the reason why I do is because I never take no, as an answer. It's always a maybe not. I look at it as a not right now. It's not right now. But I've always considered myself to be on the forefront of doing something new, doing something exciting, doing something that hasn't been done before, and continuing to challenge myself. So, do I consider myself to be a trailblazer? Yes, but I had help getting here. So, I had a plethora of mentors who mentored me, who supported me, who guided me, and who helped me get where I am. So.
Stepping into Wisconsin, which it's funny because a lot of the state schools, they have a diverse athlete population. They may not have a diverse student population. How have you managed to kind of bridge that gap and kind of try to combine the two worlds?
Well, I think our coaches do a phenomenal job. I mean, our product speaks for itself. I think you have to look at, when you talk about diversity, not just, diversity in race and ethnicity, but also look at geographic location, right? So a lot of our schools, our state schools, we have reciprocity now. You know, we have a lot of Minnesota students. We have a lot of Iowa students. We have a lot of Illinois students. So we're not just, you know, diverse in ethnicity and race, but we're also, you know, diverse with, you know, regionally, with people coming from our student athletes coming from all over. You know, a sport like ice hockey, we have several Canadians. A sport like gymnastics, we have a lot of gymnasts who are from the East Coast or who are from down south. So again, I think our coaches do a phenomenal job with recruiting our student athletes, with retaining those student athletes. Could we do a better job in some areas? Absolutely. But I think that's a part of us telling our story, right? And getting our message out there about how good we are, about how dominant we have been. So, and I realized that in order to sustain our success, that we do need to become more diverse, even more diverse. So we're working on bridging that gap. But again, it's going to take time. Have we been able to tackle those things in my first 4 years? No, not necessarily, because, you know, we had a pandemic we had to get through first. And then we had some other things we had to get through, but it is definitely and has been on a list of things to do. But our coaches do a phenomenal job, and I think that is in part of because of the different sport offerings that we have. You know, we just added women's lacrosse. We added men's tennis. We brought back men's tennis, and we're bringing back men's soccer. So that those sports are going to allow us to diversify even more.
I spoke to Coach Campy, the basketball coach at Oakland University, and he mentioned being a Detroiter is just, it's a scene unto itself. Being from the city of Detroit, what is the one thing that when you think about where you're from, your background, that stands out most that you can actually say, you know what, I'm from this place and we are this?
We are tough. We are tough. We are get it out of the mud type of people. You know, nothing is handed to us. We work hard for everything. So grit. If I have to use one word, you know, we are definitely tough. We're gritty. We don't mind getting our hands dirty. You know, we don't consider ourselves to be better than anyone else. We're very welcoming people. We're very down to earth people, but we know how to work hard and we know how to get the job done. And we're very prideful. You know, when people say, you know, Danielle, where are you from? And I say, I'm from Detroit. And they'll say, oh, well, are you from Southfield? No, I'm from Detroit. I'm from the city, born and raised in the city. So, and I pride myself on that because, you know, I come from very, very, very humble and hardworking people. And there's definitely a lot of pride. I take a lot of pride in that. So, Detroit people are very prideful. I will definitely say that we have the mentality of Detroit versus everybody. That's definitely the mentality that we hold.
What is the one you could have for lunch right now?
What's the one? You broke up a little bit. What's the
Oh,
one?
sorry. What's the one food from back home that you wish you could have for lunch right now?
Oh, chili fries. Without a doubt. We have our own like little chain of restaurants called Coney Island. So definitely chili fries, with either maybe a loose burger, or a chili dog, no cheese, with mustard and onions. So that would definitely be my lunch for sure.
Spago or Verner's? Which one goes best with that food? Because Verner's is strong. It'll like rip the paint off the side of a house.
I love burners. I love burners. I would have to say though, it's definitely a Faygo Red Pop, and it's not soda, it's Red Pop. So
Now, explain to people who outside of the Michigan area, What is the deal with people who like the Rock and Rye from Faygo? It's something.
It, I can't describe it. It's unlike, it is so good. It is so good. And you know what? I don't even know what makes it good. Like, it's unlike any other pop, but like a rock and rye float. So you get a couple scoops of ice cream and you pour the rock and rye in there. Oh my God. It is just like the best.
Now,
It's the best thing ever.
also being from Detroit, how would you fix the Pistons and what happened?
Oh goodness. So you know we can't have it all at one time, right? So the Lions got going, which who thought that that was ever going to happen, because they had been good since Barry Sanders, right? But honestly, I am very critical of Monty right now. I don't know what's going on with him and Ivy. You know, he was a top prospect coming from Purdue, and I don't know if he's playing mind games with these young boys, but he's got a lot of young raw talent on his team, and I just don't know if they're not being developed or what the case may be, but we are taking a beating this year like none other. So I don't know what Monty is doing. You know, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but you're one of the highest paid NBA coaches in the league. I'm gonna need you to get it together or else you gotta go.
Do you think because Monty has had that reputation, that stern reputation of being loved, that somehow, some way, he's gonna be there for the next 3 or 4 years, no matter what? Or do you think because of his salary, the pressure is going to find him?
Well, here's the thing. I always say, in this business of hiring and firing coaches or personnel, who are you going to get? Right? So it's easy to sit up here and play more Monday morning quarterback and say, this person should be fired, that person should be fired. But if you're going to let someone go, you need to be able to not only pay out the rest of their contract, but then who else are you going to get? Right?
That
Who
is an
else are you
issue.
going to get? So I'll throw a name out there of who I think they could go get, but I don't think it would ever happen because I think he might be blackballed from the league. But Mark Jackson. What Mark Jackson did with Golden State during those early years, he developed those players. I mean, he was calling Klay and Steph the best backcourt in the country, and people were looking at him like he was crazy at the time. And he was right. You know, he was right. So, you know, we need someone to come in and be able to develop the young talent that we have, because being able to get a free agent, no one is dying to come to Detroit. We're not a sexy city like LA, like Philly, like New York, like Miami. We don't have the tax incentives or the tax breaks that you're going to get in Florida or Texas with no income taxes and stuff like that. So when you're looking at what an organization or what a city has to offer, we're not going to get those marquee players. We're just not. We have to develop talent. And so we need a coach that's going to be able to do that.
I thought about this because I was talking to our friends from Detroit, and they were asking me who I thought would be one, because the Pistons have a lot of young talent, as you mentioned. Shaka Smart.
That would be very interesting. But here's the thing. Why leave college though and deal with all of those NBA egos?
Money. Lots
Yeah.
of it.
Yeah, but he had a pretty nice contract though coming from Texas though.
This is true. And plus, it's the opportunity to take the next step, where I knew that he grew up around Madison. I always thought that his goal was to coach the Badgers, but coaching Marquette, I mean, he's made them a threat. I'm thinking if they continue to succeed, what would be left? And he's still young enough where if things don't go right in the NBA, he'd go right back to college.
That's true. He could. You know, I never thought about it that way, but I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he does this year in the tournament. I think NIL is interesting now. That, you know, I recently asked an official, a D1 official, that I know, you know, what does it look like? Like, if you would tell me today who's going to win the tournament, I couldn't tell you, right? I just, you know, I'm too busy with our own D3 sports. But, you know, NIL has really impacted basketball because the rosters are smaller. So you see a lot of transfers. You see a lot of, there's not a lot of continuity in rosters anymore. So I could see Shaka possibly making that jump because it's a lot harder to coach his sport, with NIL being so dominant right now. It doesn't impact the football, you know, rosters as much because there's 100 and some odd kids on one, you know, on one roster, but it could have a major impact on the basketball roster of 15. So that's interesting. I didn't think of it that way, but I like that though.
I think that he, and it's funny you mentioned the NIL. When you look at, when you do a research for an article or a podcast, you look up the stats of a player in college, like, oh, they went to Tennessee, DePaul, Texas A&M, and USC. Oh, and they're a sophomore. Okay. I mean, it's just one of those things that you never get used to it. The commissioner of the WIAC, Danielle Harris. Commissioner Harris, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the AdDrop Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Terrence.